Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Thursday, January 17th, 2019. I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today is Charlotte Henry. Hi, Charlotte.
Hello.
Also with me today is Andrew Orr. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, good to be here.
So the first thing I want to talk about today is something that, Andrew, you wrote up for us over at Mac Observer this morning, which is called Collection One, and why people should be aware of this.
Yes. Yeah, so Troy Hunter, he's the creator of Have I Been Pwned?
Mm-hmm.
He found this, people told him about this. It's a collection of data breaches. It was on the cloud service Mega. It is 87 gigabytes worth of data. Okay. And if I did the math right, and I probably didn't because I'm bad at math, but I think that would be about 43 Harry Potters.
Yeah, we were talking before the show about the fourth Harry Potter book being about 2 megabytes as an electronic book. And so, yeah, that's a whole lot of data when you think about it on paper like that.
All data breaches are now going to be defined in size in terms of Harry Potter books.
Did I just start something?
Yeah.
I hope
no,
so.
It's gonna be big.
Yes. Yes. And what Mario we'll do is we'll get, breach. Yeah, we'll get more precise numbers and then we can tell you, you know, this was 8 Goblet of Harry Fires, Potter. You guys. Like, yeah.
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 Yeah. This was the full series. Harry has now left school. This was so big.
Like 10 times over. That's how many pieces of data we're talking about here. So what this is, Andrew, is not the thing that struck me about Collection One is that it's not a single data breach.
Yeah. And that's why it's not really a huge deal just because it's not a new breach. It's just a big dump of old data breaches.
Okay.
So
like all put together.
Yeah.
So
and the root folder for that was just called Collection One.
Yeah. So, and primarily what this is email addresses and passwords from loads of different places, like we said, assembled all together. And now you talked about Troy Hunt. Now the site that we're talking about here is called Have I Been Pwned? And that's P-W-N-E-D. And that word comes from when people in the olden days, it's story time, kids. In the olden days, when people would break into a server, they would call it owning the server. And if you look at your keyboard, you'll notice that O and P are right next to each other. So when people would talk about owning servers, every once in a while, somebody would type P-W-N instead of O-W-N. And so it was just a typo that ended up inching its way into vocabulary. Now, the thing in particular about this site that is great is that it will tell you, if you feed it an email address, it will tell you this is how many times that particular email address, whatever one you give it, has been detected in different data breaches or something called a paste, which is when there's like these anonymous places that you can put up giant blobs of text and it's just called a paste. And so occasionally those get indexed as well. And when they do, then you can find out if your email address is in one of those as well. So Charlotte, one of the things that's interesting about this one in particular is that hopefully any of your data that you could find on Have I Been Pwned has already been sorted out, because we talked to you about 1Password a while ago and you just started using it, right?
Yeah, I used the trial and I bought it. I'm a very big fan. It works on it all syncs up on my phone with my fingerprint as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think what the scale of these breaches show, and as you guys were discussing, this is not a new breach. This is a collection. This is all this kind of dumping, a new collection of dumping of data.
Mm-hmm.
I think you guys described it off air as a kind of Frankenstein thing, didn't you? It's kind of,
yes.
Mm-hmm. But what I like about using 1Password and what this kind of attack shows is, actually, you know, using we know logically that using the same password and your date of birth for things just isn't safe. But sometimes when you're setting up an account quickly and you just can't be bothered, mm-hmm. it's so easy to do a not very secure password, and you pretend to yourself you'll change it later, but you never do.
But you're not fooling anybody, including yourself.
But no. But the thing about 1Password is it makes all of that so simple. Like, it's literally, I've set up some Chrome extensions as well in my browser. Mm-hmm. It's just, so it's really easy. So I'm a big fan of that. There are obviously, look, we're not, I personally like 1Password. There are plenty of other services and equivalent tools out there that I'm sure are similarly easy. It's just that was the one you personally recommended to me, and that I happen to find really nice and easy to use and fits with my workflow really nicely. But there are plenty of services out there.
The two others that come to mind are Dashlane and LastPass. Those are two others that I hear people talk about really commonly, sort of in the same breath as 1Password.
Yeah, and I think if you look through app stores and stuff, they're all pretty well regarded across the board. And I don't think they're much dissimilar in price either.
Right. And, you know, another one that you can use if you are mostly invested in Apple gear, for the most part, you can use iCloud Keychain. And you can set things up with that. And you can see in iOS 12, you can see in action how they've made it even easier to use iCloud Keychain to fill in passwords. And they've also opened up that password functionality to at least 1Password. I haven't seen if other password managers have taken advantage of that or not. But when you get to a password field above your keyboard in that little auto suggest area, it says passwords. And then you tap on it and it lets you pick the password that you want to use on that site. And then you just move on, and it's a piece of cake. And making it even easier on iOS to make sure that you're not mistyping your password is always a good thing. So you can always use iCloud Keychain if that works for you. If you have a Windows machine or an Android device or two, and you want to make sure that you're cross-platform, you may have to look at something else. But iCloud Keychain is built into macOS, it's built into iOS, it's tvOS, you can use it in all of those places. So it makes it very easy to make sure that that stuff is safe. And so if nothing else, you may want to check out Have I Been Pwned, and we'll make sure that we have a link to that in the show notes, because it's a very useful site. And
One more thing.
Yeah.
The Have I Been Pwned tool is built into 1Password now. So it makes it even more easy.
Okay.
It there is an option now within 1Password that highlights if it thinks your passwords are known in a vulnerability.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. I know another thing that it will do is it will there's a couple of different views, and you can click on a view for like, I haven't changed this password in a year, or these are ones where the password is the same. So as you fill everything in and 1Password collects all that information for you, it will tell you, like, you know, you have these 8 that all have the same password on them. Maybe you should change those. So that's always a good
tip. And like, it's fine that we you know, we like discussing these stories. We all find security really interesting and important. We like to know different tools and suggest to each other and our listeners different tools. But actually, I find having to discuss these stories deeply frustrating in a way, because it feels like, and I don't want to be too negative, because tools like Have I Got Pwned are really useful for trying to keep safe online. But I find the kind of regularity with which these major breaches are happening almost exhausting to cover. And this is a slightly different element, because it's a kind of Frankenstein thing. But the sheer amount of data caught up in this collection one, like you guys were saying at the beginning, is just horrifying.
Mm-hmm. It's so much information. And I think part of that is because this actually was a talk that I have given more than once. One time was at Macworld, and there hasn't been a Macworld for a number of years now, so you can tell how far back this goes. And I gave a talk about security basics, because, like, when you get a car, you know, everybody sort of explains to you, like, this is what you do. You make sure you roll up the windows, you don't leave your laptop on the front seat, you lock the door behind you, you make sure you take the keys, you know, basic stuff, because that will keep most people out of your car. And when you get an ATM card, people tell you, like, if you're going to go withdraw $500 alone at night, don't stand there in front of the ATM and count it loudly when you're the only person in the area. You know, do these sorts of things. Make sure you're not waving the card around all the time. Like, people give you those sorts of things because we've had ATMs for a long time and we've had cars for a long time. And a lot of times I think people don't have that sort of innate knowledge that sort of gets passed on because security is new and weird and super complex. Like, the security field when it comes to technology, like, is so vast and goes so far because there's mobile security, there's, you know, computer, like, you know, desktop sort of operating system security, there's Internet of Things security, there's home automation device security. You know, is somebody going to come hack my Wemo if they can get into the Wi-Fi network at my house? There's wireless security, there's wired security, there's server side security, there's router. Yeah, somebody probably could. So when you think about it that way, like, a lot of people get to, like, I don't know what I don't know, and just sort of shut down. And so part of why I like to talk about these stories is to make sure that people are aware of them and start understanding things like a password manager can make this better for you. And that sort of stuff sort of becomes baked into people's technological knowledge, and they're able to start passing that on. Just use a password manager. Let everything be random. It's totally fine. Do this. Let me explain Diceware passwords to you, you know, different stuff like that, so that people are able to make sure that their own data is secure. And part of the reason that that's helpful is because we continue to also have the conversation about the information that some of these servers is holding about you, which is not always as much or as little as a lot of people think it is, which is another headline we'll probably end up talking about another day.
Yeah.
So that's part of why we like to talk about it here anyway, is to make sure that we're sort of slowly raising the level of standard issue security knowledge. Like, everybody has a certain amount of knowledge about their phone or about their computer. You know, being able to do that same thing and make sure that you have that same knowledge about your information is also really important.
Yep.
I could not agree more.
Well, now that we've finished with the PSA portion of the program, I want to go ahead and tell you all about our sponsors today. And the first sponsor today is Eve Home. And Eve Energy, specifically from Eve Home, is pretty fantastic because what it does is it allows you to have control over lots of different pieces of information in your house and lots of different hardware in your house. So you can switch your appliances on and off just by tapping on them. They're HomeKit integrated, which means it's also very secure, a thing we like. Because it's HomeKit certified, it means that all of the interaction is very secure, like I told you. It also means that it's integrated with the S-Lady, so you can tell your assistant in your phone to go ahead and turn that off or turn that on. Or you can even make it so you don't have to say anything about turning it on or turning it off, and you can automate some of that stuff. So every day when you come downstairs, the tea kettle is already hot and waiting for you. That's a really good feeling. Ask me how I know. And you can set those things to go on and off with timers. You can set lights and other appliances as long as they're set up properly. And you can also use that to monitor how much power each of those devices is using while they're on. You can even set things up to only work with occupancy. So as long as someone's in the area, then it makes sure that those lights are on. Or if there's nobody there, that those lights are off and you don't have to actually do anything for that to happen. Anybody who's ever had to explain some of their Internet of Things or home automation setup to another member of their family or somebody staying with them knows exactly what I'm talking about with that. And one of the other great things about it is that this Eve Energy will connect directly to your iPhone or iPad by using Bluetooth Low Energy. So it doesn't even require a bridge if you don't want to. So you can find out more about this at evehome.com. That's EveHome.com. Our other sponsor today is Capterra. Now, Capterra is the leading free online resource that helps you find the best software solution for your business. There are over 700,000 reviews of products from actual software users, and you can find everything you need because there are over 700 specific categories you can use to make that decision. There's everything from vast categories like project management or email lists, all the way down to something very specific like yoga studio management software. So whatever kind of software it is that your business needs, Capterra makes it easy to discover that solution very quickly. Visit capterra.com/TDO for free today and find the right tools to make 2019 the year for your business. Capterra.com/TDO, and that's CAPTERRA. Now, the other topic I wanted to discuss today is, Charlotte, an article that you wrote about an article that Tim Cook wrote that appears in Time magazine as of pretty early this morning for us in the United States.
I think it was kind of late last night, this morning exactly. And it's Tim Cook again talking about online privacy and why he thinks it's so important and how he thinks big tech firms like Apple can improve it. He's kind of got his 4-point plan that he keeps reiterating. He says people should have the right to have their personal data minimized. People should have the knowledge of what data is being collected and why. People should have an ease of access, correction and deletion of personal data. And he says we all have the right to data security. To that end, he wants the US Congress to pass some major legislation. Andrew's written previously about how he wanted the Congress to pass legislation similar to the GDPR that we have here in Europe, in the EU. And he also wants, and I think this was a bit of a next step, he wants there to be what he calls a clearinghouse for data brokers. He wants there to be increased transparency. We all know our data gets sold on, right? And I think what Tim Cook seems to be saying is he wants there to be more transparency in this by having a clearinghouse. Who is selling your data? Who have they sold it to? Where has it gone?
That sounds like a pretty reasonable request to me.
Right. So these are the two things he has called for in his article. So there's two things I think that's significant about this. The first one is that Tim Cook has really nailed his colours to the mast on this, hasn't he? We've seen it a number of times. We've even seen that kind of slightly trolly banner at CES.
I think slightly trolly is the most diplomatic way that you could describe that, yes?
Yes. Which we particularly enjoyed was pinned to a Marriott hotel.
Yes.
I think we enjoyed that, didn't we, Kelly?
We did indeed.
So we've had that, but you know, he's also in almost every interview I see now, Cook is talking about these issues. And I think that's pretty significant. I also think it's significant how much more we are hearing from Tim Cook.
Yes.
Like, you know, every couple of weeks now, we are referring to very, very significant interventions from Tim Cook. And that is a step change in my mind. And I think that's also really very interesting.
It is. And part of what was interesting to me about this was it was an article that he wrote in Time magazine. So this wasn't really an interview. This was something where he sat down and set out, like, this is the agenda. This is what I'm going to talk about. And then talked about it. And, you know, sometimes with an interview, that's not always the case, you know, because somebody's going to ask in an interview something about, you know, the banner or bendy iPads or bendy phones or, you know, whatever. And so, and you can't always rely on that, you know, for being the showcase that you actually want it to be. So that was part of why I thought this was interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. Tim Cook has decided, I'm going to speak to this major publication. I'm going to write an article and I am going to write about this topic. Obviously, as I understand it, there's a variety of hearings at the FTC and so on. There are a variety of hearings over in the US, aren't there, at the moment? So it was obviously timed to coordinate with what's going on there or could happen after the government shutdown and so on. So there's all of that going on. He's timed it very specifically, of course, but these are now regular interventions from Tim Cook and a lot of them are on this issue.
Yeah, it seems like whatever it is people want to talk to him about, there's always some facet of what they end up discussing that has to do with privacy. And, you know, like CNBC is not where you expect to hear somebody from technology talking about the right that customers have to their own data or to know what happens to that data. And that was exactly what he wanted to talk about on CNBC.
Yep.
So finding that A, he is being more visible on anything, and B, that it is this particular issue, I find very interesting because, yes, we follow Apple very closely, but it would be equally newsworthy if the head of Google came out and had these kind of discussions, or the head of Microsoft, or I can't believe I'm going to be able to say this with a straight face, and I guess I'm not, at the head of Facebook. like, these are people that aren't coming out and talking about, yes, it should be important that you, it's very important that you have a very clear idea what my company is doing with your data. Or what other or how okay we are with giving your data to other companies, and this is what they're doing with that data. And we're not hearing that from anybody else that I can find.
No, but so let's also, if you allow me to be cynical for just a moment.
Of course.
Briefly. Now, I completely admire what Tim Cook is saying. As you said, it doesn't seem anything he has really advocated in this piece seems particularly unreasonable. I think most consumers would quite like all of those things. But he's obviously, this is not just, okay, he has said before that he believes privacy is a fundamental human right.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Let's also be clear that this is a very clear way of positioning the company, mm-hmm. himself and his company.
Oh, yeah.
They understand they're under pressure. We know they're under pressure in a variety of fields. And they're kind of, I can't believe I'm going to say this, and I'm definitely going to get criticized on Twitter for it, but they're kind of putting themselves in the BlackBerry position where they say, we're the safest, we are the ones that protect your data privacy.
Mm-hmm.
You might be paying a premium for it, but that's what you're getting.
Well, they do have to differentiate, and that's a good way to do it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying Apple, the iPhone is the new BlackBerry. I'm obviously not saying that. But you know what I'm saying, in that they are making this part of the company's philosophy,
mm-hmm.
in a way that their competitors are not.
Right. And I think part of what makes that interesting is that they're they're turning this into part of the conversation. So when the new iOS was shown off at WWDC this year or last year, when there are new announcements about, you know, the new version of macOS, the new version of iOS, the new feature that that the new phone is going to have, whatever that may be, one of the things that they highlight about that is the security of that. Apple Pay looks really nice. You walk up, you bonk your phone on the thing, and then you've paid for something. And let me tell you, none of that information stays on none of that information gets transmitted anywhere. Here's how the actual handshaking works so that your credit card can be used to make that payment. And they tell you up front, like, what it is security wise, what that data is, and where it actually is stored. And partly, I hope that because in other ways, like we talked about just yesterday with the packaging discussion, this is a way that Apple can sort of force that conversation to happen other places, because people are going to wait and see, you know, when Google shows off the next version of operating system, of Android operating system, what's going to happen there? And how does that impact, how is what the new feature is in Android's operating system going to impact people? What does it mean for people's data? What does it mean for the kind of stuff that you're using? And, you know, I would expect that that's something that's going to continue to get a higher profile and become a larger part of conversation. That's my hope.
Well, I think it requires someone like Tim Cook to make that happen.
Mm-hmm. And because Apple continues to force this conversation, I think that that's part of where it's going.
Mm. Yeah, I read I think it was this morning, and I didn't read the article, but I saw a headline that supposedly the next version of Android would have more privacy baked in. But I'm skeptical because unless Google changes its business away from advertising, mm-hmm. I don't think whatever privacy controls they put in is going to mean much.
Right. It'll be like those elevator buttons that aren't hooked up to anything.
Yeah.
You can flip that switch if you want to, but it doesn't really change anything. I want to believe that that's a thing that's going to happen and that it's going to make things better, you know, for people who are Android users, that it's going to make, at least if nothing else, it's going to make it more clear what's happening to your data, because I feel like that's the most important piece. We have to start there. So hopefully, you know, because if you do keep your data secure and you do, you know, go to some length to make sure that your data isn't everywhere, then you don't end up in something like Collection One. You don't end up being part of something like that. So hopefully, That will get better. And as Charlotte said earlier, she looks forward to your letters. So you can send those as comments on the show notes over at macobserver.com. You can email us at observations@macobserver.com, and you can talk to us on Twitter at TMO Daily. So with that, I want to thank you both for being here today. Charlotte, thanks for coming by.
Thanks so much for having me.
And Andrew, thanks for being here.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And this was the Mac Observer Daily Observations podcast for Thursday, January 17th, 2019. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other.